does it really mean to be courageous? Bridget van der Zijp explores this and other themes in her new novel, I Laugh Me Broken. Ginny, the narrator, learns of a potential threat to her health soon before her wedding. She could get tested to see if she's inherited the genes for a life-threatening condition. Instead, she takes off to Germany, telling everyone that it's to research her next book. Cynthia Morahan reads from I Laugh Me Broken.
Ordinary tiredness, my fingers tingling, overthinking. I had actually done something on the plane that I was having trouble explaining to myself. I'd stolen an expensive pen from the man with a gurgling stomach who'd sat next to me on the last leg. He'd been marking some business papers with it, and I'd caught occasional glimpses of flow charts, lists of names and numbered paragraphs. Without really knowing anything, I decided his work was sinister. So when he eased out of his seat to go to the toilet, I slipped his fat silver pen into my bag. Quickly and stealthily, like an operative whose job it is to unsettle. And when he came back, he looked around and under his seat and asked in a starkly confronting manner if I'd seen it. I shrugged, and he didn't press further. But for the rest of the journey, I was made so uncomfortable by his heavy aura of suspicion that I half wanted him to go to the toilet again so I could put the pen back. So, is this how it starts? Minor oddness. If a person dares to search symptoms, their eyes will swim in and out of focus, and something awful will prickle at the back of their neck. Usually begins in the extremities of the body, involuntary twitches in fingers, toes, and face. In the early years, a subtle loss of coordination. Cognitive problems become noticeable, difficulty thinking through complicated tasks.
Bridget van der Zijp, Tanakwe, how are you?
Kia ora.
What got you thinking about a woman facing this dilemma to test or not to test for a life-threatening disease?
Well, some years ago I had a writing contract working for the Neurological Foundation, so I had a lot of opportunity to think about the impact of neurological diseases. And Huntington's, which this book is about, is obviously there's quite a lot around about Huntington's just at the moment, but it's particularly interesting. It's sort of at the forefront of a lot of research as well, but it's also a very devastating disease. So, you have a very clear genetic path to it. One of your parents have to have had it for you to be at risk. And if one of your parents have it, then you have a 50% chance of also getting it. So it was about looking into the future and do you want to know that this devastating disease is coming down the track, or would you prefer to try and kind of deny that that's actually happening in the future, or suspend the knowing? Because once you do know, you can't unknow.
Well, I mean, it forces all of us who are reading the book to ask ourselves that question. I guess you've had to go through that too.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite a universal question, because you're actually asking yourself, how do you want to live? And, what are the values of your life that you want to live? And I think in the course of writing this book, I asked a lot of questions. I put a lot of the dilemma in front of people all the time. And people would often say, I'd ask them if they would take the test if they wanted to know. And off the top of their head, people would often say, yes, I'll take the test because I want to know my future. But in actual fact, only less than 20% of people who are at risk for this particular disease do take the test. So that isn't actually the real human response. So I think we overestimate courage in ourselves a lot of the time, because in reality, a lot of people, when the outcome is actually terrible, a lot of people would rather look away.
Now, Ginny finds out this news, this 50-50 dilemma of hers. She's about to get married, seems to be in a nice situation. She's a writer, and her response is to flee to Berlin. Now, I was interested not only why it's Germany, but also the novel she's researching, because you mentioned that word courage, is about a maverick sea captain who is imbued or seen as being ultimately courageous.
Yeah. I think Germany is a really interesting country to explore those concepts, because they've had to live with really difficult concepts and ideas post-war about what courage really is, and whether or not as a nation they had the right kind of courage when they were living under a oppressive regime. And so, you know, when you go to places like Berlin, it's just so imbued with history that, you know, you do actually think about courage as a broader concept. And the swashbuckling count, who was actually a real figure, he had the courage that also kind of amounted to kind of a sort of a harebrained insanity at times. And so she's looking at that as a sort of exemplar of courage, but also something about our New Zealand nature, that we were very charmed by that count when it happened back in the, you know, 1918.
How did you come across his story? Because I'd never heard it.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. I came across it quite randomly. When I was first thinking of going to Germany, I was thinking about writing something about the Kermadec Islands. So I Googled Germany, New Zealand, Kermadec Islands, and up popped the story of the Count. And then I found myself going all the way down that wormhole. And so the Count, he was in the First World War, he marauded in the Pacific. He sunk a lot of ships. He mostly sunk cargo ships that were trying to get up to Germany. And so he didn't actually kill people. And then he was captured and brought down and placed on a camp in the Hauraki Gulf. And then he made a sort of gentleman's agreement that he wouldn't escape from the camp. But they pretended to put on a Christmas play, and they asked for some things, including a child's atlas and a sheet that they intended to use for a sail. And the night before the play, they scarpered off into the Hauraki Gulf in this speedboat that belonged to the camp captain, captured a scow, and then took off to the Kermadec Islands. And it was this massive story at the time, you know, like people were glued to the daily papers and it was all find the Count. And when he eventually was captured, he was placed in Mount Eden jail and told everybody there that he would be the governor of New Zealand if Germany won the war.
You've got to love him. I can see why Ginny's drawn to the story. Yeah. But at the same time, there are consequences of her actions, because she's leaving behind her fiancé, Jay, and you've got to feel sorry for him. He's mystified.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we now know that some of the earliest symptoms of the disease, before you actually start showing some physical symptoms, are sort of compulsiveness and rashness. So Ginny's always measuring herself against... When she finds that out, she's always measuring herself against those initial symptoms, like was the fact that she ran off to Berlin rash. And I think also if you're seeking courage like she is, then you're kind of attracted to other people who are showing courage or rashness or something else as well. And so my concept for the book was that Ginny, whose mother committed suicide when she was very young and her father retreated into alcoholism, doesn't really know who she is. And then when she's struck with this crisis, then she goes off to Berlin. And so my concept for the novel is that she's quite retreated. So you only really get to know her through a series of conversations with other people.
I've only got a minute, but I've got to ask. I Love Me Broken. Great title. Where's it from?
Yeah, it comes from a German expression, which is Ich lach mich kaputt, and it means I'm laughing my head off in German, basically. But it's a joke on a bad translation.
Thank you so much. I learn everything every day. Thank you, Bridget. That's Bridget van der Zijp. Bridget's new novel is called I Laugh Me Broken, as we were just discussing, and it's published by Victoria University Press.